And joining me now in the studio from Utah State Parks, Kathy Donnell, park naturalist. Good morning.
Good morning. So it's time to start making your camping plans because we are reserving campsites through August 5th, which is 4 months before the day you would come in. But right now, if campgrounds are open in this area, it is first come, first serve, and most of them go on reservations beginning May 1st. If the entrance station gates are not staffed at the parks, please pay a fee using an envelope with cash or check. If you have an annual pass, please display it to avoid a citation. Annual passes do not include camping. They are just for day use. Deer Creek State Park, the visitation is rising with the temperatures. Currently, the reservoir is 95% full, but still plenty of shoreline for fishermen. The main boat ramp and the island boat ramps are open with courtesy docks in place. Deer Creek State Park is no longer on the suspect list for quagga mussels. However, boaters must still display the AIS certification form on their dashboards. Camping is available with sewer and power at sites, and portable water is available near the weigh station. At Wasatch Mountain State Park, this is mud season, and everybody is antsy to get out, but please stay off the muddy trails. It creates uneven trails and more erosion than normal. Day use in the park is open. Soldier Hollow Golf Course is open now. Wasatch Golf Course will open this weekend. Campgrounds will open around April 15th for first come, first serve. Snake Creek and Pine Creek Canyon are still closed. ATVs can ride up Snake Creek and Cascade Springs, but there is snow at the top, so be careful. April 28th is our second annual Dirt Crew training. If you love trails, you will love this program. Volunteers receive a Wasatch Mountain State Park Day Pass for volunteering. Please email Kathy Donnell at utah.gov to sign up. At Jordan L. State Park, the park is open and three RV campgrounds and restrooms are open on a first-come, first-served basis until May 1st when they go on reservations. There is some minor construction going on at Jordan L. The main ramp and PWC ramp are open and the courtesy docks are in at the main marina. The flush restrooms at Rock Cliff are not open yet, but there's a porta potty for the campgrounds and a vault toilet at the top of the boat ramp. And at East Canyon, it's open for day use and camping. The boat ramp is clear of ice and the wedge dock is in the water to assist boaters. The campgrounds will have water turned on this month as well as the restrooms. The lower Mormon Flats trailhead is flooded, so be careful when using the trail. April 7th is East Canyon's first ever kids fishing tournament. All kids can show up and register for the event. Trophies will be given to winners of each age group. Visit East Canyon's website for more information. Spring is a hard time to get out and hike because the trails are muddy, but bird watching is great as the birds are coming back from the south or flying through to their northern locations.
Okay, Kathy, we'll see you next month. Thanks.
Thank you.
It's 8:19 on the phone with me now with an update from yesterday's Summit County Council meeting. I have County Council member Kim Carson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Major item yesterday was the report on short-term housing. What was in the report, Kim, or in the numbers that stood out most for you?
Well, they did an inventory of the total possible units within the county, and those are residential units, and there was over 25,000. And then of those, there were about 10% or just over 2,500 that were licensed, but they have found significantly more than that on internet listings, I mean, well over 4,000. So that was a concern. It means we have a large gap between the number that are actually licensed and those that are putting their house out there for rental or condo.
And the majority of these, again, within the city limits?
It's hard to tell because the way they collected the data, they included 84060 and 84098. So it's just tough to say. During the next phase of the study, they will work on separating those two out. They were able to look at it specifically by property, but it was still difficult that way, looking at neighborhoods to determine where the bulk of them are.
So did the county council decide to go forward with a phase two?
We don't have that proposal yet, but I think we will. I think there's enough information that we can get that will help in setting policy. I know one thing right off the top, we want to look at our current licensing process and also work with Park City on that, because both of ours had some areas for that we need to improve on as far as being able to specify who the operators of the units are and being able to determine the exact unit. Some of them, it sounds like when people came in and made applications, like if it was a management company, they might not know all the specific unit numbers, so they just use one unit number to identify all the properties that they're managing within a specific area. So we need more detail on that.
Right. And so what is the licensing process?
Well, right now, there's different ones for different municipalities and things. Basically, they come in and get a business license from in Summit County. And within that, they need to say, you know, who the owner of the unit is. You know, we didn't see an actual form, so I'm just going by some of the things that were mentioned last night. And in Snyderville Basin, they do actually go out and do a fire and safety inspection, which we feel is extremely important and one of the main reasons we want to make sure these units get licensed.
Okay. So the recommendations, again, included doing some audits on the short term. These are achievable, you think?
I think they are. This company that we had contracted with to do phase one, it's called Intopia. And they're really recognized nationally for doing this kind of work and have even worked with states and helping them develop policies and things. So I'm confident they could do a good job on phase two. But we just need more information from staff on what types of things would we look for in phase two, what those costs would be, and what our return on investment of those dollars would be with that study.
So what's the bigger priority, finding out more about the rental units or getting them to pay the taxes?
You know, they're both really important because we use those taxes to support things that we do for visitors in the community, such as helping to pay for the for our transit system and trails and things like that, even sheriff support. So that's important. And Levitt pointed out that, you know, we kept talking about TRT, the transient room tax, but he said, you know, they also need to collect the other regular sales taxes, which include our transportation and transit taxes and other funding that we use that goes into the general fund to provide, you know, services and support. But I think the safety issue is a big one for me. I want to make sure that if somebody is coming to Summit County and whether they book it through one of our larger property management companies or they get it online through one of those organizations, that they're staying in a safe, you know, place.
Yeah, and can these short-term rentals, I mean, can they be assessed any additional fees other than, you know, if they're on a home-based business as opposed to just a typical nightly rental done through a lodging company?
You know, I don't believe so. The only thing we talked about in that area was if we could require them to hire one of the companies that does tax collection, because there are companies for those that want to rent out their own personal property and not use one of the property management companies. They still are responsible for collecting those taxes. And so we were wondering if we could require them to then hire one of the companies that provides that service. And we were told by our attorney that no, we cannot.
Yeah, you also heard from Deputy County Attorney Dave Thomas that the county cannot file legal action, and I'm guessing this is against people who aren't getting the inspections and paying the taxes?
Well, that was specifically on the tax item. We can't use the data that we would collect in order to prosecute them. But I think it was primarily on the tax issue, not the business license.
So apparently you have to work with the State Tax Commission first. What's happening there?
Not much. I mean, we have not approached them recently because we didn't have this information yet. Now that we have this, we may go to the State Tax Commission and talk to them about the ability to get taxes. We would like to file a lawsuit against some of the. I shouldn't say we wouldn't. We would like to. We would like to explore the possibility of filing a claim against some of these companies that are not, remitting taxes, including Expedia and its companies. Airbnb does have an agreement with the state. They're collecting and remitting those through the State Tax Commission. However, up to this point, the State Tax Commission has not been open to wanting to require that they remit these, and I'm not sure the reasons why.
What do we know about how this short-term rental housing is eating into the supply of longer-term worker housing?
Well, I think when you look at the overall numbers, there is evidence that it is. They showed a per-night rental cost, and so these people are receiving, the biggest category was between $100 and $299 a night. So obviously, if they're able to get that on a nightly basis, that's more than they would get if they had a long-term rental in there. So unfortunately, a lot of people are doing this for the financial reason.
All right, taking a look at other topics. What's the status of Senator Kevin Van Tassel's Senate Bill 191? This is the oil and gas pipeline issue. During council comments, a report that it may come back for a special session, so the governor didn't sign it?
The governor did sign it, and that's why we're requesting that it come back through a special session to make what we would call a technical amendment. We're asking for, a one-line amendment that would just clarify that when they refer to transportation, that it does not refer to underground pipeline and transmission lines.
Okay.
And that was what we were told from the get-go that it did not include, yet in our clear reading of the bill, it does just that. It would enable the state oil and gas commission the ability to restrict local land use over pipelines that are underground.
So what are your chances of that coming back then for a special session?
You know, we have had a meeting with Senator Van Tassel, and he was open to talking with the different stakeholders that he worked on from the oil and gas industry on the bill. Two counties, Duchesne and Uinta County, that worked with us or that worked on the bill initially, they're open to making this change. It had not been their intent to restrict local land use on the pipelines. And then we had a meeting with the governor's office this week. He understands clearly the concerns. So he'll be working with the governor and explain this to him. We're going to try to get letters of support from other entities like the Utah League of Cities and Towns, and UAC's definitely willing to do a letter of in support of this amendment.
So it sounds encouraging.
It does. I think it is encouraging. First, we have to determine, you know, the governor has to decide if he's going to call a special session. We think that's likely. And then if that's the case, then we really need to lobby for this.
All right. Also, during public comment, you heard again from two students from Park City Day School asking you to consider a countywide plastic bag ban. And you can consider this since the bill to ban bans lost at the state legislature. So the question is, will the council do that?
Well, we need to have that conversation. I was going to actually call Jana Young, our deputy county attorney, and talk with her about it, because as a policy decision of this type, I would want to work with her. And, you know, there's a lot involved, as the city found out. So I think it would be, personally, I would like to explore it and see what it entailed and see if it would be, how easy it would be to do within the unincorporated areas of Summit County.
Yeah, so if the county enacted a ban, would it be on all stores, even the smaller 7-Elevens?
That's exactly what we would need to look at. So this is going to take some time for us to collect this kind of data and the type of impacts it would have, whether we would just target the larger retailers as Park City did, or just make a blanket bag ban.
Yeah. And do you think that the public support for this is different than between the Snyderville Basin and the east side of the county?
You know, that's another thing we'll need to find out. We just don't know the answer to that yet.
All right. And I mean, is there an opportunity to institute a bag ban then just for the west side if you were to find strong opposition on the east side?
Well, I think most of the retailers we would target are within municipalities on the east side. So that might not be a significant issue. It would be up to those municipalities to institute a bag ban within their limits.
All right. At this week's County Health Board meeting, you got a brief report on Summit County's opioid lawsuit. Any specific comments or questions that the Health Board had on that?
No. It was just the first meeting we had had since County Attorney Olson had filed the lawsuit.
And
she just wanted to make sure. Tooele County did just file, and we're under the understanding that Salt Lake County will be doing so shortly.
Right. And any idea what Summit County has budgeted to prosecute this?
You know, there are no costs to the county except time required of our local staff, and that should be fairly minimal. So it'll be... our costs will be, you know, their time during the course of normal business, and we don't think it should prohibit them from doing their other required work.
And if in fact it was to go through and you were to get some money, then I mean, one of the reasons that you were filed this was because of the costs associated with what opioids have done to Summit County. So, would you even recoup any of the enormous cost over the last, you know, 10 years?
It just depends on how the final lawsuit plays out and if there's damages awarded. What I would hope that we would get out of it is at least money to support the programming we're doing currently and some of the increases that we're going to experience in providing behavioral health services.
All right. Finally, as chair, you signed the findings of fact and conclusions of law for the Colby decision in granting the appeals against the development. What are your feelings about that decision?
It was an incredibly complex matter. We were painstakingly careful in our evaluation of the materials presented to us. And I feel very comfortable with our decision. And I do want to say it's not a reflection on how we feel our planning commission is performing. We think they're doing excellent work, our planning department and the planning commission. And, you know, we fully support them. This is just one where we, you know, it came down to a fundamental question regarding the original application and whether that equated to a conditional use permit. And we didn't agree with that conclusion. So we look forward to being able to move on to other important things like updating the development code and trying to be very clear in some of these areas. On this one, this was kind of a fluke thing where it happened to be an application from this certain time period when these Class 2 permits were issued. I don't expect us to see a lot of similar applications, but there are things that we can do within our development code to clean it up
and prevent
things clearer.
All right, prevent something like this happening again.
Right.
Okay. All right, Kim, I need to leave it there. Thanks for
okay.
your time.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's 8:36. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the third annual Thin Air Innovation Festival and Youth Sports Alliance have teamed up to present the Park City Nation Olympic and Paralympic Homecoming Parade and Street Concert. In the studio with details, I have the Executive Director of the Youth Sports Alliance, Emily Fisher, along with the Vice President of Special Events for the Park City Chamber Bureau, Bob Kohler, and Chris Finney, Park City Special Events Coordinator. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Bob, let's start with you. The Thin Air Festival kicking off tonight.
Yeah, opening night at Park City Live, 6:30. They'll have some speakers, some entertainment. Comedian's going to emcee the program. Also an opportunity to sort of mix and mingle and have some food and beverages.
Okay. Tickets still available?
Yeah. ThinAirParkCity.com is the website, or you can call the chamber and they can hook you up.
Yeah. What kind of participation have you gotten this year?
Pretty good, actually. Thin Air has partnered with the Snow Sports Industry Association, who's bringing out a group of members to participate in what they're calling Spring Fest at Thin Air. So they're creating their conference here in Park City, tying it in with some of the other activities that Thin Air is producing. So opening night, the free concert, sort of adding value to their existing conference. And that's kind of the goal of Thin Air, is for other companies, groups, to sort of bolt on to Thin Air.
Yeah. So how many people were you bringing in?
I don't know the exact number, to be honest, but I think it's pretty significant.
I mean, you're talking hundreds or thousands?
Yeah, I think so. No, I think it's in the hundreds, yeah.
Okay. And then tomorrow, Emily, it's the Park City Nation Olympic and Paralympic Homecoming Parade, starting, what, 5 o'clock at the top of Main Street?
Yes, so 5 o'clock, we will have the athletes parade from the top of Main Street, from the Wasatch Brew Pub lot, all the way down Main Street. And then about 5:45, we'll have some speeches on the Thin Air stage from athletes and our mayor and a couple others. And then from 6 to 7, we will have athlete autographs from on the Main Street Plaza with the Bridge Street Cafe, providing food and beverages for purchase. There will be a beer garden, and all of the proceeds from the food and beverage will go back to the YSA to cover the costs of the parade. And then at 7 o'clock, the Thin Air concert will start, and we will have Park City Nation flags that we'll be giving out to the kids that they can get autographed from all their favorite Olympians.
Okay. So who have you got coming?
So we have 18 2018 Olympians. We have two 2016 Summer Olympians that didn't necessarily get a parade, and then we have around 20 to 25 Olympians from previous games, so about 43 total. Which should be really exciting. I think only in Park City can you have a community event and have 43 Olympians there.
Okay, well, tell us some of the big names. I mean,
okay,
is Ted Ligety going to be
yes,
there?
Yes, Ted Ligety will be there. We'll have Ted Ligety, Megan McJames, Will Rhodes, Abby Rehnquist, Maddie Olson, and just a bunch of others, some athletes that call home Park City home now. So Ashley Caldwell, Jalen Koff. And pretty much Chris Foate, who's a bobsledder who has Olympic medal from 2010. So just a lot of Olympians from 2018 and then from previous games. We have Eric Heiden, of course, Dick Roth, who's a 1964 Olympic gold medalist from swimming, Summer Sanders Schlope, Eric Schlope, just a lot of different fun people.
So you're going to kind of have them staged around the plaza? People could almost just do a big
yep,
circle
exactly.
or something?
Yep, just the, up there on Townlift Plaza. We'll have them all up there with their Sharpies and ready to give autographs and pictures.
Great. And then at 7 o'clock, the Thin Air organizers have producing the, mm-hmm. the free concert. Tell us a little bit about the band, Citizen Cope.
Yeah, Citizen Cope's going to play. Citizen Cope and some friends. So he's bringing out some additional musicians. And concert starts at 7. Should be a good show. I've heard a lot of people talking about it, how they're excited.
Okay. Chris, let's bring you into it. How big of a crowd are we expecting?
We're expecting a crowd somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000. Depending
okay.
on the obviously depending on the weather, might get a little inclement weather, which might help
no,
us out.
No, it's not going to rain.
Just bring a raincoat, right?
I think it's going to push through. I agree. Yeah. I think it's going to blow by.
We're fine as long as there's no lightning, right?
That's right.
Okay. And so what does this mean then for Main Street closures?
Yep. Some of the impacts to tomorrow will be upper and lower Main Street closure. So we're going to take parking and close lower Main Street tomorrow starting at 5:30 a.m. for stage setup. And that'll be closed 5:30 till roughly
up 2 in the morning.
Yeah, until they can break down the stage. And that's from 7th Street down to 9th Street. And then Upper Main Street for the parade, we're going to close Upper Main Street parking and take that at 3 p.m. And that'll be closed until 6. So from right around the Brew Pub down to 7th Street will be closed from 3 to 6.
Okay. What do you want people to know about parking in the Old Town area?
Yeah, parking where... encouraging everyone to carpool and park at the high school and Treasure Hill Middle School starting at 3 p.m. And you can take the yellow bus from there, free transit. That'll come directly to the transit station, as well as après ski. You can park at the resorts. And from Park City Mountain Resort, you can take the red line that'll bring you right to the transit center. And then obviously you can take the Deer Valley bus that goes from Deer Valley to Main Street from there as well.
All right. If you do want to pay to park in China Bridge, you'll only be able to access from Marsac Avenue then? Or from Sweet Alley as well?
Sweet Alley as well. Mm-hmm. Sweet Alley isn't going to be closed. So normal operations over there, it's any of the surface lots, so the flagpole, Bob Wells, as well as China Bridge. Normal pay, so again, free during the day in China Bridge, and after 5, first hour free, $3 per hour after, $18 max rate for the whole day until midnight.
It might be easier to access China Bridge from Marsac Avenue. Sweet Alley will be open, but it'll be staging for the parade. So depending on when you're heading into Old Town, keep that in mind.
Okay. Always take the bus. A lot of more fun, I guess, that way, right?
Yeah, I agree.
Anything else that we need to let people know?
I think I'm just really excited. The Grand Marshal of the parade is Billy DeMong, who's a 5-time Olympian, and he's a gold medalist and a silver medalist. And I think it's just neat that Billy was a 2002 Olympian, inspired Olympians like Will Rhodes. So both Billy and Will will be there tomorrow and then can inspire the next generation of Park City kids. So I think it's just really fun to see those kids be able to interact and see, you know, these are their idols, their friends, their neighbors, their babysitters. So it should be really fun. And if anybody wants to sponsor the parade, we do have a couple of sponsorships available. So you can reach out, ysaparkcity.org.
Okay, Emily, Bob, and Chris, thanks for your time this morning. With the ski resorts closing on Sunday, coming up on Monday, a number of the Park City and Summit County bus routes will change. In the studio to tell us about that and what to look for is Merle Hewitt. She's Park City Transit Supervisor. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's talk about the big changes.
Okay, so the big changes are reduction in service due to the drop-off. Silver Lake Village and Empire Pass services will be suspended until summer service, which begins about mid-June. The Yellow Prospector Express bus will be suspended until next fall. And the in-town routes, the service hours change from 7:30 a.m. to 10:30 p.m. peak service hours. So we still have 20-minute frequency in operation. The routes are a little bit modified in terms of the in-town because the Park Meadows and the Thanes 3 Kings service will be combined together as routes. And the Kimball Junction service will run from about 7 a.m. until roughly 10:15, 10:30 p.m., the pink and the browns. And there, the brown service stays the same. The pink service is modified slightly that it does not service Park Avenue. It services the Belt Route Quickway out of town. And the White Electric Express will operate the same, so it'll run till midnight, 7 a.m. to midnight. So we're recommending that people use those park and rides at the Richardson Flat and ride that. Kimball Junction.
Kimball Junction.
This is Blake Fonsbeck also,
At the Richens building, excuse me.
Yeah. So this is what, just like a kind of a 2-month temporary?
Yeah. During the shoulder season, you know, the employees are gone. A lot of the businesses, the resorts, even some of the merchants on Main Street shut down for temporarily. So there's not a need for the type of service that we have in the winter and even in the summer service. So we scale back.
And the June 8th is when the summer service will start back up. So that will have some additions back for the summer as well.
Yeah. Well, last year, Blake, we had employees. I mean, they do. They work year-round in Silver Lake and at the Montage. I mean, how do they get to work then?
Well, that's a good question. That's something that they've been working on with the Montage. We just have not been able to add that service during the shoulder seasons yet due to funding. And they're from what I understand, they do carpool and do as much as they can that way to get up there and work with their, they have some shuttles that they work with their employees as well. But they've made those requests from us, and we've tried to fit them in. But it's just a matter of money at this point in time, unfortunately. But it's on the radar, and it's certainly something that we're trying to work on implementing.
Yeah, because I know we talked about it last fall that there was going to try and figure something out for them. But it sounds like now they just pay for it.
Yeah.
That's probably the best bet anyway.
Yeah.
In terms of how some of the route changes worked this year, I know that you worked with Prospector Village residents to bring back the Red Bus. So did that work like you'd hoped?
Yeah, that worked fine. We ran into, when you get traffic, it makes it a little harder through there during peak times, but we were able to manage that and work through that. There were occasionally some times when the yellow was stretching as far as its route and that. And so that's something that we'll be looking at and trying to see how we can work that out for this next year. But that's, again, just a winter service, so it's not something that we'll have a little time to do some planning ahead.
Yeah. Any idea in terms of what your numbers were?
On that particular one?
Well, just for the winter, yeah. You just counted it. You counted it annually.
Up, but we haven't got those yet.
Typically, we move about 2 million passengers by the end of December. I believe our numbers were actually up this year. I think it was 2.2.
Yeah, we actually been fairly stagnant after the recession. We were about 1.7 million and 1.8 right in there. And then the last 2 years, we've gone up 8% and then 10% ridership over in 2017. So 2017, we hit 2.16 million. So we really jumped up. And we see that the Electric Express was a big part of that. As well as people riding the other routes to get to the Electric Express. So that kind of we've seen that ridership increase, and that's been a real help.
It'll be interesting to see how the summer numbers go, because we also move about our first million people by mid-March. So the rest of them are through the rest of the year. So that's why we want to promote transit and try to get people to ride, maybe once a week. In terms of that.
Yeah. How are the electric buses holding up?
They're holding up really well. They're operating probably 98% of the time. Occasionally we'll have something with either charger issue, but now that we have two chargers, that's kind of gone away. And then there's been like some small little glitches that the company's worked on. They've been really good at helping us figure those out, but for the most part, we've been able to have them on the road all the time. They're running, we are actually leading the country in the number of miles and charges and everything that any electric express or battery electric express route has done so far. And we've just, as of March 1st, we were at around 250,000 miles that we've gone with those six buses. So that's quite a bit. Our passengers by that point were a little over around 350,000 since June. So those buses have been holding up. They did very well in the winter. It only increased the charge time just by a couple of minutes because of running the heaters. Once we got the second charge station, it's been becoming a really good flow and working well. People seem to love them and are really enjoying them.
Yeah. Do they get charged at both locations, or do you?
We have that option. Mm-hmm. They do that right now. We're still kind of figuring that piece out, is where's the best way to charge. And we find that if they charge up here going down the hill, they don't hardly use any energy at all. And then they don't charge much down at Kimball Junction now. It used to be that that's the only place we had to charge. So we were doing about 10-minute charges to get through the route. But now we're finding it a little different. So.
Yeah. And of course, the big part about it is the battery themselves. Have those had to be replaced, or are those holding up?
No, those are holding up. Those should, we did something a little different. We did a battery lease. So we actually lease the batteries. And so whenever they hit 70% efficiency, which we expect will be at around year 3 to 4, but when they hit that, then we'll replace with the new battery, the newest technology, and then we'll go again. And the plan is that we'll replace it three times over the 12-year life of those buses.
Yeah, and the technology keeps getting better, I'm guessing.
It does. So it's kind of a guess as to how well they'll be next time. So.
Yeah. And, of course, I saw the photo during this year's legislative session, Park City bringing down one of the electric buses and had it posed there in front of the Capitol for everyone to see. And then apparently on the way home, I heard that it ran out of juice.
Yeah, well, and then we knew that these are the fast charge. So we've ordered extended range ones for November that we'll be getting, and those will go for about 250 miles. But these only have about a 40-mile distance on these, and so that's what they're very dependent on, that charge station and not having a charge station. We planned to have a tow truck down just off of the Capitol to bring it up, but when we got down there, we were at like around 80% mm-hmm. Energy, and just the, I don't know, the cowboy in us or something said, hey, let's give it a shot and see how far we can get up the canyon and have the tow truck follow behind. And so we got up to they got up to the Lambs Canyon exit, and but he like coasted in down the exit and was at 1%, and then they just had just enough to be able to pull it up onto the tow truck. But I know our driver, he said that he never realized how far a half a mile was when the bus is saying, "I'm running out of energy."
Yeah, and had he made it to the top of Parley's and was able to coast back down the other side, would it have charged the battery?
It would have. It has about a 30% recovery rate as it charges. And so that's why we, when we went up to Parley's and then all the way down to the Capitol, that's why we're at 80%. So we were like, whoa, let's give it a shot. But
it
was kind of fun.
We idled for a few hours at the Capitol so people could see the features of the bus, and that brought the battery charge down. Yeah. Otherwise, I believe we would have made it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had some water bottles and other things in there. I asked them, did they just start, you know, saying, "Hey, we need to lighten up the load." But it was kind of a fun adventure.
You know, just yesterday I saw this promotional video from Proterra. Bragging about its buses that have climbed the hill now to mm-hmm. Snowbird, to Powder Mountain. It basically it took it to every resort, and it made it. So what? That's a different bus than
so
what
that's
we've got.
The buses that we will be getting in the fall with a new drivetrain. Their new drivetrain. It's a dual motor drivetrain. It's 20% more efficient, and they're longer lasting batteries as well. And so we implemented with UTA. We said, come out and prove to us that you can do this. And so they came out just before Sundance and did this test. And it was pretty impressive. We were excited. We went up the mine road here, and they were able to go well beyond the speed limit, and then get behind a cement truck on that passing lane and get down to 15. And then when they got to the passing lane, they were able to crank it up and get up to like 35 going around the cement truck on the steepest grade. So it was pretty impressive. We're really excited about it. We probably won't have it initially on these seven that we get, but we're paying for the drivetrain, and as soon as they have it, they will come out and switch them out, and we'll have that.
Yeah, so do we need those, though, given what we're doing here? It's pretty flat.
Basically, these seven that we're getting are to replace seven diesels. The Electric Express was a new route, and we were like, okay, we can run this on this grade. But the seven diesels that we're replacing with these electrics, it's important that they can do everything the diesel can do. And so that's one of the beauties of this this new drivetrain, is that we don't have to say, okay, this bus can only run on this route or this route. It could run on any of our routes. And that's what we want to be able to run up to Silver Lake or Empire Pass and be able to run that bus on that. And this will do that. That's one of the beauties of where they've gone with technology in such a short frame, is that they've really made it so that we can replace a diesel bus.
Yeah, part of that, though, was, as I recall, that the electric buses are larger, and it was harder for you to get in and out of the neighborhoods. They have
made a 35-foot now, and so what we were ordering is the 35s. And the beauty of them is, as well, I said the range is around 250. That will cover quite a few of our routes. We do have a few longer ones, but these have the same fast charge technology on them, So if you get towards the end of the day and things are running down, you just stop at the fast charge station here, and in 5 minutes you're back up enough to finish the route for the rest of the day. So it's really exciting that way.
Yeah, so we'll see them maybe with the Camas connector?
Possibly. They could possibly run in that. They could run any of those and be able to do that. They will plug in. They will charge overnight, essentially, for 3 to 4 hours, and then they should be able to get most of the day, just depending on which route they're on. And again, we'll lease the batteries, so we'll get better batteries by 2-3 years in.
Yeah, and we'll need more charging stations too, it sounds like.
Actually, we probably won't. These will probably be the only two that we're going to get, unless we expand further out somewhere with something with the UTA or a PCSLC Connect or something like that. But at this point, we're kind of thinking that the battery technology is getting so good that we may not need to have charging stations in the future.
Yeah. And what about this? I'm hearing that what we did see is almost a 20% increase in the city's carbon output as a result of now charging the buses.
So that's kind of a temporary piece, and we are working to, I believe it's by, and I might get this wrong, but it's right around that time. By 2020, we're going to be using renewables on those electric bus lines. We just kind of, again, we did this a year in advance of what we planned, and so we're a little ahead. And rather than turn things down and slow it, we said, let's go for it. We need it. We need that express line. And so we just went for it early and has some things in the first. But I guess the other part of that, though, is we're getting 21.3 miles per gallon diesel equivalent, and we're saving about $10,000 per month versus running a diesel route. So we're running a lot less diesel. So I don't know about that number that you've got there, but it's something that we're really seeing some benefits from it.
Real quick, I'll just have another 30 seconds or so. Any updates with regard to routes out of the Wasatch County, Heber Valley?
We're just kind of waiting for they're in talks and things and looking at stuff, but we really don't have anything at this point in time. We're ready to move if we need to. So
okay.
That's something we'd like to do.
Blake, Merrily, thanks for your time. And again, people can find the new schedules online, parkcity.org.
Thank